You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I am Gaius. Germanicus is here. Hail, conscript father. We begin with a lesson in imperialism. In these last days since we spoke, we're at our favorite wine bar by the Thames. The centurions are retired from different legios, telling wonderful stories. We'll tell one later. Wonderful stories. We have witnessed the debate over the use of the gunboat, sometimes called the B-2, by the empire that inherited our talent for using force in order to impose our will. That is Rome, and that is the United States of America. So we begin by observing, strangely to us, why it is that so many really well-educated members of the intelligentsia in the 21st century want to divide the world between liberal and illiberal, as if that somehow washes away the sins of imperialism. In our time, 91 AD, springtime, now summer, we accepted the fact that the empire kept it safe. Now and again, there was an eruption, an emperor here, an emperor there, some vengeance. But then again, we would stabilize and reestablish our authority for 1,500 years. And we were an empire, and we were proud of it. So, Germanicus, I come to you, conscript father, with a puzzle. I read in the Financial Times, surely the best paper representing liberal democracy in the 21st century, an essay by a renowned intellectual, Timothy Garton Nash, dividing the world into liberal and illiberal, talking about elections forthcoming, the EU becoming a power, so that there are three powers, the United States, the EU, and the Eurasian illiberals. I thought, as I listened to him, how complicated it gets for him. Whereas in our time, we are the empire, and we impose our will with force. The B-2, for example, it was a one-off demonstration of gunboat diplomacy, something the British would recognize easily. You send a gunboat in, you show that there will be no mercy, and suddenly the rebel, the revolutionary, the cruel nature of a local warlord becomes intimidated, and everybody deserts him, and we go on as an empire. That looks to be a possible outcome of Iran, although, as we said last week, this is the Parthians, this is the Persians. This is a 2,000-year, 2,500-year, 3,000-year empire itself. It's in their blood to remember that. So they're not rolling over as easily as some other country might. But in any event, the United States expressed its power with a gunboat. It used it once. It could have followed up, but it chose not to. And now we see the lessons are being taken around the world. Good heavens, what have they got? We can't stop it. Why is it, the question to you, Germanicus, the 21st century liberal thinkers want to avoid being an empire? What is it about what we have established that makes them hesitate? Good evening to you.
Good evening, Gaius. The British Empire cavilled at being an empire, even though it had an empire within an empire called the Indian Empire, and Victoria was known as the Queen Empress. Nonetheless, Britain thought of itself as a liberal parliamentary order and really recoiled for much of the 19th century from the idea that they were an empire like Rome, and yet they used force with incredible imperial effectiveness. And when we talk about gunboat diplomacy, it's important to know that what we're really confronting is the ability of an empire to exercise its authority without a decision by force of arms. In other words, a bloody war in which the opponent is beaten to the ground and cries out for mercy and quarter, and you have a military ending, is not always necessary, because the majesty of the empire is such that it can radiate authority, and it's instilled that authority within the breast of their opponents. And if exercised properly, a ceremonial demonstration of power done correctly can bring a potential enemy who might be ready to go to war to the peace table and to make the necessary, genuflection ritually in return. In other words, the demonstration of force, which may involve combat at a lower level, but it's always demonstrative expressions of power, actually bring an end to what is would otherwise have been a war brewing. And the most famous Victorian example, which is really quite resonant to what just happened, was at the end of the Russo-Turkish War of 1878. And this war had really begun because Bulgaria had rebelled against the Ottoman Empire, and the Ottomans went in and were slaughtering Bulgarians, and the British referred to this as the Bulgarian horrors. Well, that's very similar to our ally Israel and the depredations it is wreaking upon the Palestinians of Gaza. And Russia intervened, Russia, the much bigger power, who was a long-term adversary of Great Britain, just as Iran is now an adversary of the U.S., and certainly of Israel. So when Russia stepped in to stop these horrors and to march to Constantinople, the British intervened. And how did they intervene? Well, it was very much like the B-2 and nuclear missile submarine strike just concluded. What the British did is they sent five capital ships. These are ironclads, but they were considered the most powerful weapon in the world in 1878. And Admiral Hornby, the commander of the Mediterranean fleet, sailed these ironclads through the Dardanelles at night in the teeth of a blinding snowstorm. Quite a consummate act, and anchored the next day off of Constantinople in the Sea of Marmara. And the Russians were then at the gates of Constantinople, and they stopped. And they went to the peace table, a famous conference that was convened by Bismarck, the Conference of Berlin, resolved that conflict. The Russians did not want to go to war again with Great Britain the way they had in the Crimean War, where they'd been defeated. And so Britain was able to pull off a real coup here, just as Iran today really did not want to go to war with the United States. And Israel, which is very much like the Ottomans, a kind of recalcitrant ally going off on its own and engaging in heinous acts, could be also brought to heel. In the sense, the capital ship as this radiant expression of imperial power was able to bring everyone to the table, because in reality, none of the parties really wanted to get into another long and bloody war. And so this is what the U.S. was able to do just recently with its seven Spirit bombers and their 14 magnificent magic bullets and the Leviathan of the Deep, whichever SSGN it was, this giant submarine launching hurling its harpoon-like cruise missiles. It was simply enough because it broke the spell and it asserted the awesomeness of the U.S. in a situation where both sides really didn't want to go to war. Israel had been pounded by the Iranians, just as the Russians had reached the gates of Constantinople. The Ottoman Empire was ready to collapse. And as I said, the Russians didn't want to have another bloody defeat at the hands of the British, just as the Iranians really don't want to get into that kind of spat with the U.S. So the war ended. It's a perfect example of a ceremonial intervention, which is classic gunboat diplomacy. But here it had been already done in very much the same way in 1878, Valentine's Day, 1878, as a matter of fact.
It's Tommy this and Tommy that and Tommy mind your soul, buddies. Savior of the nation when the troopers are there. It's what what we do. It's right. What I do. And let us say that we Romans appreciate presenting yourself as a fair-minded enforcer of regular order. However, Germanicus, that was a sneak attack. There was no resistance whatsoever. A totally overwhelming, effective blow.
Right.
A sword that could not be fended off.
I'm not sure it was wholly a sneak attack. I think the Iranians understood that this was coming. I think they might even have been tipped off, just as they tipped us off that they were going to strike our base in the Persian Gulf as a kind of symbolic tat for original tit. I mean, I think this was a completely ceremonial situation. And it really did save Israel because Israel had been badly pounded by Iran. And in 12 days, it lost $15 billion in damage and expended missiles. And that they couldn't have kept that up. And of course, Iran would have been equally devastated had this all tripped into a war. So I think there was a lot of understanding going on behind the scenes. I mean, for example, if you go back to 1878, what were five 10,000-ton ironclads armed with 38-ton muzzleloaders firing one round every 5 seconds going to do to the whole Russian army at the gates of Constantinople? It was an understanding that was easy to reach, and the empire was able to orchestrate it. That's when imperial authority really comes in handy. And the Romans, we Romans, have done this a fair number of times.
Let's speak of the empire by speaking of the emperor. He's had a good week, and we recognize it. Emperors have good weeks and bad weeks. The Friends of History Debating Society, I'm Gaius, Germanicus is here. We're looking at the 21st century very closely, recognizing it entirely, approving entirely, except for this odd need to pretend that you're not an empire. Odd, strange. Perhaps there's some advantage in it. Not for us, and we'll speak of how we manage the savages with our legios. I'm Gaius John Batser. Michael Vlahos is Germanicus, and this is Londinium.
If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, Go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's Product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.